Blog Talk Radio. Hello, it's Shirley Gutkowski at Crosslink Radio, Health from the Eye Teeth on Down. I'm here to help you understand some of the mysteries of health from the perspective of the oral healthcare provider. That's me, Shirley Gutkowski. I am a clinical dental hygienist. I'm in the prevention mode, helping you keep your health at its optimum by bringing a wide variety of guests with the information that you want to know. And today we're going to be talking about something completely different, and that is thermographic diagnostic imaging. We're going to be speaking with a DO, a doctor of us. Well, we'll ask him what DO stands for, because that's one of the words that I can't say right either. Dr. Getson is a board-certified family physician in practice for 38 years in New Jersey. He is an assistant professor of medicine and neurology at Drexel University Hospital in Philadelphia. Additionally, he completed training for qualification as a certified cancer support educator from the Center for Advancement in Cancer Education. He's also a board-certified thermologist since 1982 and has reviewed more than 15,000 thermographic studies of the breast, thyroid, and the neuromuscular system. He's vice president of the American Academy of Thermology. Dr. Getson is also chairman of the committee responsible for formulating the national protocols for breast thermography. He is in a joint venture with other holistic practitioners who have formed Health Through Awareness, a cooperative effort to provide a variety of alternative services to facilitate healthy living through diet and lifestyle modifications. Hello, Dr. Getson.
And hello, Shirley. How are you?
I'm good, except for what is DO again?
Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine. That is correct.
I always want to say osteopathy, and that's just so not right.
Well, they're synonymous, osteopathy, osteopathic medicine. It's actually, DO is technically Doctor of Osteopathy.
Oh, well, there you go.
So you had it right.
It sounds a lot worse. I'm pretty close anyway. All right, so can you tell us what is thermographic diagnostic imaging first?
Sure. Thermographic diagnostic imaging is actually the name that we gave to the company that we have here in New Jersey and have had for the past 38 years. And what we do is we do thermography or thermal imaging or infrared imaging, all synonymous terms, and we use an infrared sensing camera. Infrared is the opposite end of the light spectrum from ultraviolet. And infrared perceives and looks at the heat of the human body. The camera converts these images into a laptop-based set of pictures in black and white and different color images, and then we can interpret certain data from the infrared imaging without the use of radiation, without the use of MRIs, without the use of X-rays, without the use of compression, without the use of all those harmful things that we know about, and we can get a certain piece of information which looks at the physiology of the body as opposed to the anatomy of the body, with the understanding that physiology in the human body always, always, always precedes anatomy by years. So the physiology will change long before the anatomy does. And most people are familiar with anatomic studies, X-rays, you know, mammograms, ultrasounds, MRIs, CAT scans, bone
right.
scans. They're all anatomic studies. And they look for things that are there. They look for lesions or cysts or tumors or whatever the area that happens to be images. Physiology measures how the body works. So we're not looking for those types of things. We're looking to make sure that the body is operating in a proper fashion, that the car is fine-tuned, if you will.
And you do that all by measuring temperature within fractions of a degree?
Within tenths of a degree, that is correct. We're measuring skin surface temperature and operating on the presumption that the human body is a symmetrical entity unto itself, that the left side of the human body and the right side of the human body, within reason, is identical.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that sounds really awesome, and that always brings up the question, what happened? Why is medicine moving in the direction of this anatomy style of diagnostics instead of this temperature?
Well, I don't think that medicine is moving in that direction as much as American medicine is moving in that direction. The science of medical thermography dates back to 1957, which makes it older than mammograms, CAT scans, MRIs, ultrasounds. I mean, it's just been there forever, and it's been something that's been available to American physicians for close to 60 years, and only recently has come to the forefront in a greater degree, because I think that with more and more information being disseminated and available through the Internet, more and more people are coming to the realization that those studies come with them, the anatomic studies come with a certain amount of risk in terms of radiation or compression or a combination thereof that we don't want. So we're looking for another way. Another way has always been there. It just has been poorly and underutilized.
Why is that, though? Why is it on the back burner?
I think part of the reason is the politics of American medicine. I think that when you look at American medicine, there's a tremendous amount of politics. And, for example, if you want to have, let's just hypothetically say, a CAT scan done, well, you know, it is limited to radiologists being able to read it and radiology technicians being able to take it. And it's a highly sophisticated study that requires a great deal of expertise. But the medical community doesn't have that same constraint on thermal imaging, because infrared, while it does require a certain amount of medical expertise and a medical license, it doesn't fall under the control of radiologists. And because they can't control it, you know, then they tend to want to say, well, it's really not very good because we can't control it. But what they're really saying is it's not very good because it hasn't been studied. Well, it's difficult to say something hasn't been studied when, A, it's been around longer than most of the tests they're using. B, there's over 1,000 articles in the medical literature. C, the United States government, the FDA and the AMA in 1984 certified that the science of thermography was beyond the experimental and investigational stage. And D, the rest of the world is using it. But it doesn't stop us in American political medicine from saying just that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Diagnostics are a real kind of a pet peeve for me in dentistry, because we're still, you know, you talk about 1957. Our primary diagnostic tools were developed in 1880. So, and
I'll just make the point of telling you that thermography actually goes back to the Second World War, but it wasn't used medically until 57. It was actually used by the government in fighter bombers in the Second World War, so it even has another 15 years tacked on in terms of the science of thermography.
Isn't it crazy? And that it just takes such a long time, or it gets put aside by, I don't know, I guess, radiologists get paid to read x-rays and radiographs, so, you know, there's a scientific basis for them, and they can charge more if they have to read it and have to have this level of expertise to take it right. So are we saying indirectly that it's easier to take a thermographic image and read it?
It's easier to take than it is to read MRIs and CAT scans, certainly, yes.
Mm. So, and then with respect to dentistry, there's a lot of conversation, again, there's kind of goes in waves, about bad root canals and how they are causing blah-bitty-blah problems, but of course you can't really track them very well because we just don't keep records very well. A particular dentist will do a number of root canal procedures, and unless you're going to go into every dental office and pull out all of the root canals that they did and track those teeth, we just don't have any way to track anything down. But you do.
Well, I can tell you that I'm about the farthest thing in the world from a dentist. And that being said, we began some years ago looking at the thyroid gland, because thyroid disease is rampant in this country. And the problem is that what we have in terms of being able to evaluate thyroid disease is a series of blood tests that are not particularly accurate, and the ultrasounds or scans of the neck, which really look for lesions and don't tell you anything about how the gland functions. So we have all these people running around with thyroid disease, and we're able to look at the thyroid gland and image it physiologically and say, even if the numbers are normal, your thyroid gland isn't working properly. Well, what that led to, almost accidentally, as so much of medicine is when we took pictures of the thyroid, we began looking at the mouth. And then looking at the mouth, we see these hot spots showing up. And while we can't identify thermographically an individual tooth, we can say that something's in the lower anterior left side of the mouth. And I will tell you that 9 out of the 10 people that I call on the phone and say, you got that hot spot right there, will tell me that's where I had a root canal.
Mm-hmm. And it travels. It's not just. Isn't it true that they're not just hot spots in the jaw? You can see how it kind of the inflammation or the I don't even know what you want to call it just travels to other parts and other organs.
Well, it certainly disrupts thyroid function, and we began to notice as well that in some women who had diagnosis of breast cancer, you could almost draw a line directly from the root canal straight down to the breast cancer site.
That's an amazing image. If no one has seen that before, it's crazy.
It's again, I can't speak from the topic of dentistry, but I've seen so many of these root canals where people say, well, I don't feel good, or I have symptoms that clearly sound like thyroid disease, and you look and you find this root canal that was done a year, 5, 10, 15 ago, and it's leaving residual inflammation or infection, and I've had people go back and actually have the tooth extracted. Again, is and they come back 6 months, 9 months later, and the heat is gone, and their general health is better. And while I'm certainly not sitting here and advocating extracting teeth, I will tell you mm-hmm. that the follow-up to what's going on is that those root canals are leaving residual heat, whether, again, it's inflammation or infection, and that's really detrimental to the patient's health.
It's severely detrimental. I've been following a case of a man who had... Well, he's had 3 root canals that he never felt very comfortable with, and all the dentists were telling him, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, because all they're doing is taking an x-ray of the tooth. Well, one of my little flags here is that we in dentistry do have no honor to the size of a biofilm and how much harm a biofilm can do, even if you can't see the size of it at all. Just because it's naked to the invisible or invisible to the naked eye doesn't mean it's not there, it's not harmful. So in this person's case, his brother died of a bad root canal, so now he was freaking out, and this is now into the 3rd year. He's now again in the hospital. He's been suffering with mycoplasma pneumonia and a whole series of other things that have happened now because when dentists looked at the root canaled teeth, they said it looks fine on the x-ray. When something like this thermographic imaging would have likely shown a different story. Just throwing
I think
it out
you're there. Right. I think you're right. I think it would have shown some inflammation or infection or something that would have assisted in the diagnostic process, which, of course, would have assisted in the therapeutic process as well.
But we don't hear about this ever anywhere. I've heard about this technique, you know, in the back of my head, but this is not something that I thought of when I was trying to help this guy get through all of his tooth drama. Why is it so, I don't know, quiet? It's not loud. It's I don't know. What I don't even have a good word for it.
I don't think there's a forum for it. If I appeared on Dr. Oz's show tomorrow mm-hmm. and showed thermographic images of the breast, the neuromuscular system, the mouth, the thyroid disease, 10,000 people the next day would be calling on the phone and saying, why can't I have that? But you know, it's just been buried by the medical community, and it just doesn't get out there. Oh, this doesn't work. Oh, this doesn't do this. Oh, this doesn't do that. And you know, and people have to go out and hunt for things, as it is with so many conditions. I mean, there's so many medical conditions that, you know, are so prevalent in this country, and because there's no national spokesperson, you know, everybody in the world knows about muscular dystrophy because Jerry Lewis did a telethon every year.
Yeah. And people still have muscular dystrophy, and it's not much different than it was when he started. Pardon my French.
No, it really isn't. But what's happening is that, at least in my practice, some people with muscular dystrophy are looking at signs and symptoms because of the awareness that they brought to the forefront, and they're able to minimize the symptomatology because they figure it out sooner.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful, I guess. That's true.
Yeah, and I think that if we do education, and that's what we're doing today, you and I, and if we do education and we get the word out, by word of mouth, it becomes, you know, one person tells two, becomes four, becomes eight, before 16, and, you know, I told a friend of mine who did this, and eventually this is what happens. We don't have any perfect diagnostic tests in this world. You're going to miss things. But when you look at the statistics, for example, of mammography, and realize that 50% of all women have breasts that are dense, and that reduces the accuracy of a mammogram in order to be able to detect a breast cancer from 85 to 63%, you know, 63% for me as a clinician is probably not good enough.
Right.
Because it means if I'm talking to 100 women in a room, 37 of them have mammograms that are being read wrong.
The coin toss, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that, you know, we have a lot of things out there, and we should be utilizing everything that we have. We should look at risk-benefit ratios, and we should look at things and say, hey, I'm doing infrared imaging, which has absolutely no contraindication whatsoever. So the worst thing that can happen to you is that you spend a half hour of your life and you don't get an answer. And you can't say that with a lot of other tests where you have compression or you have radiation or you have a lot of radiation or you have needles stuck into you or whatever it happens to be. So
right.
I think we need to look at the screening of disease and say it has to be multifaceted. You know, sometimes it's straightforward. Sometimes it's pretty easy, but most times it's not.
So for a person that has a symptom, let's say, I don't know, let's just say they have a symptom and they're not getting any results from their traditional doctor. Or maybe as a first line, would it be beneficial to have this imaging done? Where's the best stage to do this?
I think in breast disease, the answer is yes. I think you start with thermal imaging. You know, conventional doctors start with mammography. You have the radiation. You have the compression, which is the equivalent of 50 pounds of weight on the breast. And you have the combination of the compression and the radiation. So each individual thing is bad enough. The compression is the combination is worse. So I think in breast disease, you start with a thermogram. I think when you're looking at thyroid issues and dental issues, sinus issues, it should be a part of the diagnostic armamentarium. And I think when you're looking at neuromuscular problems, you know, people with back and neck and arm and leg symptoms where they go through the litany of testing and therapies and doctor to doctor, and sometimes they come out with no answer and they're given the answer, well, I don't know what's wrong with you, or it must be in your head. It gives you a different look at things, and we find things thermographically that may not be evident on other diagnostic testing because we're looking in a different direction.
Yep, in a whole different way. So how do people find a technician and a doctor to read these images?
There's a number of national groups. The oldest thermographic group is the American Academy of Thermology, which is available on the internet, and they actually have a practitioner locator where you can put in your zip code, and it will tell you practitioners within 150 miles of where you live. And they are all people who have been trained and certified by this particular group. There are other thermographers out there and other websites that, to me, I mean, I'm vice president of that group. To me, it's the oldest and the most reputable of the groups, in my estimation. So there are people out there. There's only about 400 thermographers in the country at this point. That number is growing, but there's about 400. And I urge your listeners to do their homework, make sure that the person that's taking the pictures is a certified technician, make sure that the person who's reading the pictures is a certified interpreter and a physician, that is someone who makes themselves available to discuss the images, because if you don't have that discussion phase of what you're doing, then you're left with either looking at pictures that you don't understand or a report that may be less than clear. And the whole purpose of doing diagnostic screening modalities is to get certain information that you can put to use and either make yourself better or take the necessary proactive steps to sequentially put yourself into better health. And sometimes you need that explanation, and not all thermographers are willing to do that.
I see. Because, it sounds like a no-brainer. I worked with a hygienist who was having vague symptoms, and she went to my neuromuscular therapist, who did some pretty intensive massage and some manipulations of the tissues and yada yada, and it wasn't getting better. And finally, she had an MRI, and they discovered this huge growth on her thyroid, and that's what was interfering with progress and causing her symptoms in the first place. And then I got to thinking, why doesn't everybody every 10 years have an MRI? But this sounds like a much smarter way to go. Is that how it's done? Is it a full body imaging, and then you can kind of pinpoint things before they show up, like you said originally?
No, it really isn't set up that way for a couple of reasons. First of all, thermography as a general rule operates under the premise that the body is symmetrical left against right. So when you get into things like the abdomen, where there are not paired organs, you can't compare the liver and the spleen. So abdominal thermography really doesn't have any value. I mean, you can't look at the prostate gland in a male because it's too deep. And you don't get accurate skin surface representations with the thermal imaging camera. So where you use it is in breast health, and to me that's an early screening that should be maintained at least annually, assuming that it's normal. You can look at the thyroid and the face and the dental regions, because the thyroid is actually a bilobular gland that is symmetrical because of its shape. And, of course, the mouth and the face is all symmetrical. And you can look at the arms and legs and neck and back. If there are issues that require investigation, because you don't really need to be proactive in terms of looking for neuromuscular disease. That's really something that if you're exercising and doing the right things to maintain health, that's not something that I would recommend screening. But in terms of the thyroid, if you begin to feel poorly, if the dentist, if there's an issue with the face or the metabolism and the way that you feel, and certainly the breast, yes, I agree. That's something that should be done with regularity.
Awesome. So once you find a location or someone to read that, then that would be a good relationship to maintain.
That would.
So 400 people. So if you live in Montana, you're pretty much sunk. Do you have to, get on your horse and ride a couple days to find somebody?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. That's probably the case. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that in New Jersey, where we are, I think in the entire state there are two or three of us that do thermography. So it's not just out in the great wild west. And in California, there's probably 50 people doing it. So I think a lot of it has to do with the mindset of the people living in the state too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably a good point. So I'm going to be looking for somebody around here. I think I am at extremely low risk for breast cancer. Everything that has happened to me in my life has ratcheted me down dramatically. And so I'm not a big fan of this mammography, especially, it's not very comfortable, and it's gotten a bad reputation in the last few years. So I'm going to, now that I have an option, something else to look at, I think that's probably what I'm going to be doing. I find myself leaning more and more in those kind of directions. I totally forgotten about thermography.
Well, we could probably spend an hour talking about studies that talk about the downside of mammography, and at least since 2000, there have been a number of long-standing studies that encompassed 100,000 women over 25 years, where they looked at the benefits and risks of that diagnostic test, and concluded that, as a general rule, at least in these studies, that it does more harm than the good that it provides for any number of reasons. And to me, the most interesting part of that general statistic is in the country of Switzerland in March of last year, the Medical Association recommended discontinuation of all mammography in the entire country.
That didn't make the news.
No, and it wouldn't. It was probably on, you know, page 47 of some newspaper.
Oh, God, it's such a crack up. That's part of the reason why I wanted to do these podcasts and bring to light some of these other options that people just don't, maybe they heard about it once and then they don't even think about it. But I can't tell you how many people have really raked me over the coals for my decision to wait on this mammography thing. It's just not exactly what I think is the right answer for me, and it would just be a shovel full of money going up into the wind and disappearing for me. So this is another option. Obviously, what happens if something shows up? What do you do from there?
You mean thermographically?
Yeah.
If something shows up thermographically, it will be an alteration of the breast physiology, and depending upon the extent of it, whether it's a small and focal area, whether it's a large disseminated area, we will recommend additional testing. Generally, I will recommend ultrasounds in small areas because, as you know, it's a sound wave study without radiation compression. It's safe. If it's a big area, we will try and facilitate an MRI. And even though the MRIs of the breast are done with injection of a contrast dye, that dye is excreted by the urinary system in less than 24 hours, and the medical documentation of allergic reactions to dye is about 1%, so it's a very, very small allergic reaction population. But I don't, as an individual, in my scope of practice, I don't recommend mammograms. I mean, if somebody wants one, then certainly we're going to discuss it, but I don't recommend them. The statistics are just contrary to that being the proper test.
Crazy. Well, thank you so much for helping me enlighten the audience on thermographic diagnostic imaging. And you are offering webinars through your website, Health Through Awareness. And I'll be doing one for you guys in August. But in the meantime, you're doing one a month. Is that right?
That's correct. The first one is actually next Wednesday, the 25th of February. And it's going to be live and it's free. The website is T as in Tom, D as in Dog, I as in Ice, NJ for New Jersey, TDINJ.com. And there's a webinar link to register. And if anybody happens to be listening to this podcast and it's after next Wednesday, they'll be archived. So if you go to the website, there's a link for the archive and it'll go right up to YouTube and it'll be there for a long time, hopefully. But it's got a tremendous amount of information about mammography and all the tests that we kind of glanced over today and didn't talk about, and a whole bunch of slides and some really astounding information that didn't appear in the newspapers, as you said.
Excellent. Yeah, it sounds like a really decent website, too, for information and get some background. It was pretty comprehensive. You had a lot going on there. And that is healththroughawareness.com. Is that
right? That is the second website. That is correct. So they're a little bit different. The TDI website talks predominantly about thermography and breast health. And the Health Through Awareness is a little bit more generalized. And if women listening to this have an interest in it, there's a newsletter that also goes out once a month. We don't inundate people with emails, but it's a very informative newsletter about a variety of topics that are health-related.
Well, that's how I learned about you, was through one of your newsletters that was passed on to me. So it's a good sales tool, I guess.
I guess so, and they're archived as well, so people want to go back and read. This month, for example, is all about the evils of sugar, which I know nobody wants to hear, but it's a reality.
It is a reality. The secret sugars, they're just everywhere. So thank you very much for your time today, and I'll be in touch on other topics as they come around, and I'm looking forward to the webinar in August as well.
And thank you for the invitation, the opportunity to help educate.
You're very welcome. So there we go. That was Dr. Philip Getson, and he is a board-certified family physician in New Jersey, and he does thermographic diagnostic imaging there in New Jersey. So thanks for joining us again on CrossLink Radio. If you found this helpful, please share this episode with your friends and family, and leave a decent comment down there, why don't you? Have a great day. Bye. So we're done. Thanks again.
Okay, that went quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, it's funny how fast that half an hour goes, let me tell you.
Sure
it
does.
It goes a lot faster than the 10 minutes before if we're waiting for the time to pass. So, all right, well, have a good rest of the week.
And thank you for the opportunity. We'll talk again soon.
All righty, bye.
All right, bye-bye now.